Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for a very special slumber party episode of F This Movie.
Hell yeah.
By my best friend, Doug.
What up?
Welcome back to Chicago, Doug.
Thank you very much. It's like I never left.
Thanks for coming just for this very special sleepover.
It's like I never left.
Hey, if you've never been to our website, you should go to fthismovie.net where we're posting new cool stuff every day.
Awesome.
You should follow us on Twitter. We're
awesome.
At fthismovie. Like our
Love
page
it.
On Facebook. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And you can find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. If you have not yet left us a review and you like our show and you're so inclined, we, of course, always appreciate your support.
So that's website, Twitter, Facebook, DVD Verdict, iTunes.
Face.
Email? Do you the email address?
fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Love
I think
it.
I did.
Love it.
I
love
think
it. You've
I did.
Covered all the bases.
Here's our plan for this episode.
I'm excited. I'm really stoked. I'm back in town from Los Angeles. I'm here to see everyone. It's an exciting week.
I get to
spend time with my good friends at F This Movie and do this podcast. So let's get it
and
on.
You get to hang out with me when you're done.
That's right. We're going to hang out.
So
it's
we're
like
having a
left.
Slumber party,
like
and we're
going
to be
left.
Watching movies, and then we're going to check in from time to time and talk on this podcast.
Is there
so,
a theme to the slumber party movie marathon?
Just, hey, Doug's back, let's watch movies.
Okay,
because there's really not. I didn't have time to program. I've been very busy.
I understand. You're very busy.
I tried to pick some movies from this year that have been good that I liked that I want you to see. I picked one movie that neither of us have seen.
Okay.
And then I picked some old crap that might be fun as well.
Old crap that I can sleep through.
Nothing is in Italian.
Anything Italian horror.
Nothing is in
any
Italian. But before we start watching movies and leaving this podcast only to return when we're done, Douglas.
Yes, sir.
Have you seen anything good lately? And by you put the L.A. in lately.
See that?
I can't
I have.
On the fly.
I'm on a tear.
I'm a master of improv.
I love it.
Yes, and.
I love it. I'm on a tear. I feel so good about this. Since the last podcast about a month ago, I was back in town. A month ago, we did a podcast on Starship Troopers, and I have been watching stuff fast and furiously.
You've watched all the Fast and Furious movies.
I have. I've watched a couple things in the theater. I saw Edge of Tomorrow in the theater. Loved
it. You did.
I
saw
22 Jump Street in the theater. Loved it.
Nice.
I saw, not in the theater, I saw They Came Together.
Right.
It was, I think the release of They Came Together was both in the theater and on demand, but
correct.
In the theater was a very limited release, not where I was.
Right.
So I saw it on demand. I loved it. I've seen a lot of stuff, just screeners,
yeah.
Things like that. I saw Snowpiercer.
You did?
Really good.
Yes.
Really good.
Yes.
Liked it a lot. Really good. I've seen a lot of good stuff. I feel good. And
you
I
saw Old Boy finally.
I saw the original Old Boy by Chuck Palahniuk. I'll
just edit it in later. Don't
okay,
worry.
Okay, Chuck. So yeah, I saw that for the first time for.
I mean, it's like you never left.
It's like I never left. For part of Junesploitation too, and I really again I think I mentioned this on the last podcast, is that I did Junesploitation differently this year.
Yeah.
I didn't do exploitation films necessarily. I just did movies that I wanted to watch, and part of it was because I hadn't seen a movie in such a long time because of the move and all that other crap. And part of it was because I wanted to see all these movies and just catch up. And that's what I've been doing. I've been continuing to do it. I saw Good Old Frida recently. That was a movie JB recommended and loved, a documentary about the Beatles. I saw Dear Mr. Watterson, another documentary about Calvin and Hobbes, which I liked a lot, but it's you don't have to see it if you're not a big Calvin and Hobbes fan. It's just purely a fan letter, a love letter towards Mr. Watterson and Calvin and Hobbes. So I've seen a bunch of great stuff. But Edge of Tomorrow sticks out. It was really, really good. A great science fiction movie. Great summer blockbuster in quotes, even though it's a smart movie. I feel like I'm the one person on the planet who doesn't have a problem with the ending.
Yeah.
I think it's totally fine. I'm not going to reveal spoilers, but how else do you expect that movie to end? It ended.
I think people feel like it should end at a certain point, and then it goes on a little bit
longer.
I
understand why in theory, but that's not how a summer blockbuster starring...
Well, right.
Very, very charismatic characters who you've like really respect and like
right.
should end. And also 22 Jump Street, a sequel that repeats a lot of the same beats as the first one, but man, it does it in such a way that's so aware and funny and great. And just, I've been thinking about different scenes. There's one scene where he asks for drugs in a school lecture and the guy's like, "You're a cop." He's like, "No, I'm not a cop." He's like, "Yeah, why are you wearing your badge?" And he went and looked at it. He's like, "You actually looked to see if you're wearing a badge?" So funny.
It's a funny movie. You can't be on a podcast for a long time. I feel like you just blew your load.
Oh, no. There'll be plenty of stuff.
For real?
Because it's like I never left.
You're going to keep watching movies?
It's like I never left.
I want to talk about one thing real quick in Edge of Tomorrow, and I think I brought this up in the review that I wrote. One of the things I liked about it is that Tom Cruise is introduced as like kind of a D-bag, just kind of cowardly, and like he's a PR kind of slick guy. But the movie doesn't go through a bunch of beats where he has to learn to not be an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as he finds out what's going on, his next move is to try and stop everyone from dying.
Right.
Like, he tries to help. They won't listen. He's inept, so it doesn't work. But, like, there's not a bunch of beats where he's like, I'm just going to save myself and figure out my own way out of this and ignore, you know, fuck everyone else. Every other version of that movie has him being a jackass for like a really long time, and he learns to be a good guy. But he's like a good guy from the beginning. He's just kind of inept and cowardly, but he's a good guy.
To some extent. I mean, for the most part, yeah. I think Doug Liman, the way he shot it, you talked about this on a previous podcast.
D. Limes.
Yeah. And his unique style of directing, which I have become more and more a fan of, it shows
a lot of swing dancing.
It does. Heather Graham is a very young starlet who should definitely be, you know, she's got a future, that one.
Yeah, it's the logo from You Bet Your Life. Sorry, go ahead.
So it's done a certain way. And again, I don't want to repeat something we've said before, but this is not really a spoiler for Edge of Tomorrow, but the plot of the movie is that he repeats days because he has to get it right, kind of. Or he dies and reboots, basically.
Right.
And that's revealed fairly early on. Although if you don't know that, it actually makes, I think, the experience better. My wife didn't know that going in. And when that was revealed, she was like, wow, what a twist. She liked it a lot. What Doug Liman does also is he doesn't belabor, like what we've already seen before, he does it in such a quick, unique way. Yeah. We're not bored with the repetition because it kind of, he knows where to take the shortcuts.
Yeah.
And I think even that, let's say, everything you said was true. Tom Cruise is kind of a cowardly, he's just like a wuss and, you know, just kind of a weenie, you know?
Yeah.
And even if he did want to look out for himself in a couple of those reboots, so to speak, Doug Liman's not spending any time on that
because
he knows it's just like, well, this is just the stupid cliche stuff. But you're right. I mean, all the things we said about Tom Cruise, he knows how to pick a picture. He knows how to pick a character. He really is a nonstop. He works so hard. He is such a promoter and such a consummate professional. I mean, I can't imagine that man has a life outside of his crazy life, which we've all heard about. But who cares about all that stuff? Because he makes good movies.
Right. And then people don't go see them.
I think international. Probably.
Yeah, it's done okay, but it has still made less than a lot of movies.
It's all fuck Transformers, and I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I can't even say fuck. I haven't seen Transformers.
Oh, I saw it. Fuck it. But
But it's like I guess there should be something for everyone, you know.
Sure, it's just upsetting when the thing that's the worst is for the most people.
Well, right, but what do you expect? And again, I'm just playing devil's advocate. Free will, right? what do you expect when a movie who is made for 13-year-olds, when 13-year-olds are the ones who go to theaters because they have nothing else to do with their parents' money, and that's what they spend their money on. And again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm saying as a 30-something myself, I don't go to movies very often just because, you know, you've got family, obligations, work, whatever. So when you do go, it's that much more of a treat, but you're definitely picking and choosing and kind of missing out on some things. Like, I missed out on Captain America: The Winter Soldier in the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, my God, I so wish I could go back. I wish it was out right now so I can go see it, because right now there's not a ton out that I want to see necessarily in the theater, even though there is some. But, you know, if I had no obligations and I was on Christmas, a summer break, I would definitely see, like, all that shit, you know?
Yeah, right. Devin Taraci wrote a really good article at Badass Digest a couple weeks ago called, like, I don't give a shit how much Edge of Tomorrow makes, or something like that.
Okay.
And it's basically saying, like, ignore the box office grosses. This movie is good and it's going to live on.
Right.
So let's focus on that. Like, let's be happy that this movie exists. And I know that that's, people aren't getting upset, like, hey, this movie exists and not enough people are seeing it. It's more like, hey, if this isn't a hit, we're not going to get more stuff like it. And I don't know if he makes this point in the article or not. He might, so I'm certainly not going to take credit for it. But, you know, I think that's even a hard argument to make, because there's a very slim chance that even if this movie is a big hit, I think he makes this point, that a studio is going to say, oh, they're responding to the quality. Sure. They're going to say, oh, they're responding to this element and this element, and copy it with five different shitty knockoffs instead of like, oh, people really want smart,
right,
good, well-directed summer movies. Like, that's not what's going to happen, even if it makes $300 million. So let's not all get bent out of shape.
Right. Well, it's something also I think you could draw parallels to Snowpiercer.
I think, in your
review on the website, fthismovie.net.
Hey, that's our website.
You talked about how this movie with the Weinstein brothers,
yeah,
the kind of shitty treatment it got,
yeah,
because he wanted to cut 20 minutes, and who cares, the politics of movie making. But so they tried to like fast track it or shelve it or whatever, and you know, shame on them, because this movie is going to go down in history as one of the better, smarter, more unique science fiction movies, if not just regular movies of the last decade. And that's the kind of thing, I think something you said just kind of stuck with me, like it, living on, this is going to live on. This,
right,
is going to be something that you go back to and say, well, I remember that movie, and or it kind of was a seismic shift almost in how things are made. You know, you look back on the previous decades and The Matrix, Star Wars, things like,
right,
that kind of like, oh, movies can be this kind of different and still,
right,
be interesting. You know?
And again, maybe this is a point that I haven't reread the article since a few weeks ago when it got written, but you mentioning The Matrix, that maybe Devin Faraci mentions this, maybe someone mentioned it in the comments. I honestly can't remember, so I apologize. But after The Matrix, we didn't get 10 movies like The Matrix.
Right.
We got, I think he does make this point, we got 10 movies that copied certain elements,
yeah,
of
bullet
The Matrix.
Vision,
right,
or whatever.
Black Leather, Bullet Time.
Yeah. Bullet Vision.
That kind of shit. No, a lot of POV bullet shots.
The bullet's talking like it's a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Then in Roger Rabbit, we're like,
oh, yeah, the
like,
bullets.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, check out our Roger Rabbit podcast on fthismovie.net.
So, again, it's not like they were going to learn all the right lessons. Anyway, I guess we shouldn't be that upset, right?
Yeah. Right. I mean, you're right. Well, think about anything that's revolutionary. And I'm not even saying Edge of Tomorrow is revolutionary.
This podcast is revolutionary.
It's just a smart sci-fi movie,
yeah,
that we should see more of, because,
right,
that's what movies should be like. But
right,
think about anything,
that's where the bar should be. Again,
right,
we say this about a lot of movies, but like every movie should be as good as Edge of Tomorrow.
Right.
Great movies should be better. Snowpiercer, to me, is better.
When you do have the revolutionary movies,
yeah,
like a Snowpiercer or like a Matrix or,
right,
like a Pulp Fiction, there are the copycats like Love at a
45,
or the whole Quentin Tarantino styled type stuff. And
right,
thankfully, I think people are smart enough to know the difference, and or if they don't, time will tell. And, you know, the good stuff rises to the top all the time.
For
so Snowpiercer, it's going to get, you know, it's the slow burn movie, obviously. It's still not wide released. I don't know if it's still
not going to be. No,
right,
this is as wide.
But it's
going to
be Redbox. It's going to be found online,
right,
illegally,
right,
whatever, however people find it. And all of a sudden it's going to be like, oh, my God, check out this crazy movie,
right,
that also has all these. It's not just crazy for crazy sake. It's crazy and just, you know, but, you know, it's great.
And it's interesting. Entertainment Weekly just debuted a cover promoting Avengers Age of Ultron. Because
yeah, I saw that cover.
When it's summer 2014, you got to start promoting summer 2015.
Sure.
It's never too early,
no,
is what I'm saying.
Sure.
So it goes up on every movie site, because every site has to report the exact same news. And it's like, look, your first image of Ultron, even though he looks exactly like he does in the comic books, and you got to see it on 15 different sites. Like, I don't
With
understand.
A paragraph or two of,
right,
their commentary, like,
I think it looks pretty good.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
Right.
And then people
movie
in the comments.
Comes out next year, and your reaction is either, I think it looks great, or I don't like the way it looks.
Listen, F-heads.
This is the discourse about movies right now.
Give Patrick Bromley props, because his
Thank
site
you. This is all I want.
Unique in as much as we provide
well,
original
we
content,
do that.
And we don't
Instead,
pander.
Instead, we're writing columns about 30-year-old Lucio Fulci fantasy movies that people are like, why am I reading? I could be reading about the new Ultron. Why
Listen,
am I reading about fucking Conquest?
The F this movie, the F implies
but I thought it was interesting that on the cover we always get the bad Photoshop of like Robert Downey Jr. in the Iron Man suit, but without the mask on, because that way we know it's Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, right.
But now Chris Evans has joined him, and I thought that was really interesting that his star power has risen to the point where he's now the face of Avengers alongside RDJ.
It's fascinating to see and you talked about this in your review of Snowpiercer, the journey his acting career has taken from Not Another Teen Movie,
yeah,
And we've argued before also that that movie is funnier than people gave it credit
for. We saw it the day it opened. We went to see
and
that.
And I think even we said it. We're like, yeah, it's okay. But, and now we're, I mean.
We saw that and Vanilla Sky the same day. And we were both so disappointed by not another teen movie.
That we still quote and it's still talked about, at least in our circles.
Plainy Janie Ponytail.
So it's, and Chris Evans has proven himself to be like, you know, he can be, you said before, was it Cellular he's in?
Yeah, that was the movie that turned him around.
Right, turned for me. You. Yeah, for me, yeah. And he just obviously has proven himself. I mean, the first Captain America still is, I think, one of the better superhero movies of this kind of generation of superhero movies. Yeah. And it's like, wow, who thought that this guy, you know, who definitely, before that movie came out, all we talked about was how he just beefed up. And he's like, you know, it was just nonsense kind of garbage media news. And now it's like, no, the guy actually gives a performance in Snowpiercer that has kind of unlike a lot of things I've seen, you know, like that you're expecting.
Yeah, when you, again, when you think about, you probably never saw the Fantastic Four movies.
No, I did not.
Which is fine. And he was always sort of singled out as the best thing in them. But he was just real smart alecky, like he was that character, just real cocky and brash. And he was great at it. He did that well. And that was Chris Evans for so many years.
Right.
You know, that's who you cast when you wanted that guy. So to see him not only do Captain America so well, which I think, in Avengers, especially, like, I think he had the most difficult role.
Because in Captain America, it's 1940s. His sincerity fit the setting. In Avengers, he had to, you know,
And he was my favorite thing, even in Avengers. So to see him pull that off and then to see him do Snowpiercer, which to me is even something totally different from Captain America.
I think that's a better way to put it. Just, it's so different. And again, we're not talking about, like, you know, he's not a Daniel Day-Lewis type actor. But
no,
it's,
I mean, he lacks the brilliance.
Oh, my goodness. He doesn't lose himself.
Exactly. He doesn't become...
No, we actually like Daniel
Abraham
Lewis.
Lincoln.
But yeah, Snowpiercer's great.
So Daniel Day-Lewis is fine, but I would never want to spend any time with him ever. Ever. Ever.
Ever? What have you seen lately, Patrick?
Well, here's my problem. I just recorded one of these a few days ago, and so I haven't had a lot of time to see a lot of stuff because I've been just so darn busy.
So lay it on me. What are we doing tonight? We're going to see...
We're going to watch some movies.
Yeah.
I did. I mean, I have seen some stuff because I was
talk.
I mean, I'll run through them real quick because I was reading this book.
Do you want to?
It's called Empire of the Bees.
It's like I never left.
And it's B, the letter B, as in B movie.
Okay.
As in A B C D F. This movie, I skipped E. So it's about Empire Studios or Empire Pictures, which was
Empire Records, I believe
it's
you want to talk
about the movie Empire Records, which I saw at the height of my Liv Tyler crush.
Oh,
and
my
it
goodness.
Nearly cured me of said crush. If you think Empire Records is a good movie, or if you think that where you used to work is like Empire Records, you are full of shit. Charles Band, before Full Moon, ran a studio called Empire Pictures, and they made lots of crazy movies. And this book was published in the UK called Empire of the Bees, and it covers the Empire Pictures era.
Era.
And era.
Era. I saw Empire of the Bees.
Era trances. Era from beyond.
Get it? Beyond era.
So it's all about those movies and those years spent making those movies. And it lists a bunch of titles that I hadn't seen. So, of course, immediately I'm like, oh, I got to see these movies. So I saw a movie called Enemy Territory, which is sort of a weird precursor to The Raid, where a white guy gets trapped in this apartment building that's run by a gang called the Vampires. And only Ray Parker Jr. can help get him out. And a young Stacey Dash, because this movie was made in like 87. Tony Todd plays the leader of the Vampires.
Every name you're saying, I know, and it's great. I need to see this movie.
It's,
or do I?
I mean, it's entertaining, but again, you really have to have like a specific taste and tolerance for this kind of stuff.
So on the spectrum is what you're saying. You have to be on the spectrum.
You know, you got to be like me. I saw Rawhead Rex for the first time, which is Clive Barker's first screenplay based on like one of his short stories. And it's like a small town in Ireland gets attacked by this giant pagan monster, which is just a dude in like a terrible rubber mask.
What's your take on Clive? I know you're a fan of Clive Barker movies, right? You're not a big fan of Hellraisers.
No, I love the first Hellraiser, and I even like the second one. Everything
Do you like
after
Nightbreed?
That I do like Nightbreed. I'm excited
to see. It's such a weird
see...
kind of movie. He makes a very specific kind of odd type of thing.
And I'm excited to see the director's cut, which is coming out.
Of Nightbreed?
Yeah.
Okay.
it's coming out in October from Scream Factory.
For whatever reason, the way the movie you're describing about the pagan guy, just like, oh, that sounds like a Clive Barker movie.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't direct it, and it's not great. Again, it's fun to see just an old rubber monster movie, but the movie itself is not great. And then I saw a movie called The Eliminators, which is about a scientist played by Denise Crosby, a cyborg, a bounty hunter, and a ninja all team up.
God, that's like, you know, that's like the B movie studio board.
And I think it's even spelled out as like such on the poster. It's like
people
scientist,
like Lieutenant
cyborg,
Tasha Yar,
bounty hunter, ninja. Disappointing. You know, it's okay. It's okay.
Is there a B movie starring zombie Mary Jo Kopechne? Is that her name?
Yeah, right. I think so.
Such a bad Kennedy. A horrible joke.
I mean, truly offensive. Truly.
Too soon?
Offensive. That Nightbreed Blu-ray that's coming out is coming out in two different versions. And I've been super excited about this for over a year when they first announced it, because this version was circulating for a long time called the Cabal Cut. And it was supposedly like everything that got cut out, because the movie got cut to shreds, and like the movie that came out is not what Clive Barker made. So this Cabal Cut was going around. It would play certain places. It came to Chicago, but it was like on this terrible fourth generation VHS dub and like almost unwatchable, apparently. That's not quite the version that's coming out. They've gone and remastered a lot of stuff, and they've actually cut together what they're calling a director's cut. So Scream Factory finally announces that this thing's coming out. It's coming out in two different versions, just the regular special edition, which is like $20, comes with the director's cut. Then the super special edition, which has an extra disc of bonus features, plus through a special licensing deal with Warner Brothers, the original theatrical cut of Nightbreed on Blu-ray. But it's a temporary licensing agreement, so they can only put out 5,000. They actually just upped it to 10,000. So, and that's the only time it's ever going to get released on Blu-ray, as far as we know. Anyway, that version, the 3-disc super special edition, which was limited to 5, now $10,000. $80 is what Scream Factory was asking. So I was like, well, I guess I won't own the theatrical cut of Nightbreed on Blu-ray, and that's a shame.
You know that there's certain people out there, though, that are like frothing at the mouth. It's sold out.
Their run of 5,000 sold out, which is why they upped it to 10.
I mean, they could charge 180, they'd probably still sell out.
And listen, if the money's going to go somewhere, I want it to go to them, because I love what they do, and I'm sure it wasn't a cheap
process. But this isn't even Scream Factory. This would be Warner getting the money.
Probably. Well, they would get some of it, but okay. I mean, Scream Factory has to be recovering.
But what a great deal for both, it seems like. Why would they just have a limited edition? Like, this is how big companies should work together.
Yeah, I don't know why it would only be limited, because Warner put it out on DVD, it went out of print, then it was available through Warner Archive, which is how I have it, which is how we watched it last year at our Basement Massacre. But it's not, like, available, you know, widely, so why wouldn't they just put it out? I don't know. There's one more Clive Barker movie that called Lord of Illusions, which is out on Blu-ray in the UK. And
that came out in the 90s, right?
Yeah, like 95. Scream Factory is supposed to be putting it out, but I don't think it's going to be out in time for our Basement Massacre this year, but I would love to watch it because it's Scott Bakula, and I know what a Jonathan
I'm a big Scott Bakula
fan you are.
Archer, talking Quantum Leap.
Exactly.
I'm talking Necessary Roughness.
And I really dig that movie, so I would love to be able to watch it, but I don't think it's going to be out in time.
Fuck!
Anyway, so we're going to get started with our sleepover.
Oh, I want to say something else, too. I saw something recently that you talked about on another podcast, I'm sure. Cheap Thrills.
Based on
your recommendation.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. A really,
Sarah
really,
Paxton. Hello.
Sarah Paxton.
Pat Healy.
You brought
it's
it.
Just fucking
what
great.
Made me think of it, by the way, was
Ethan Embry and Empire Records.
Exactly. Yeah. You said Empire Records. I'm thinking Ethan Embry, who does a turn in Cheap Thrills and plays that character really, really well.
Yeah.
Like a scumbag friend.
And he's been acting nonstop.
Yeah.
But like, he hasn't been in anything that I've seen in a long time.
Right.
So to me, it's like Ethan Embry went away.
Yeah.
And he didn't, but he just wasn't in stuff I saw. So to see him go away,
yeah,
you know,
and come back
kind of 90s
like
and then come back, it's like, holy shit.
And
he's
like you said,
really good.
Pat Healy's great. And actually, I was most pleased with David Koechner.
Yes.
David Koechner can sometimes wear really thin on me. And I think it's just his unique brand of comedy, which sometimes I'm totally game for. And other times it just seems acerbic and really grating. And he was really good. And the movie, I remember when the trailer came out, I think I was still writing that column and I talked about it. And I forgot it promptly. And you said it's available on Amazon Prime. Check it out if you can. And I did the same night that you told me to. And it was just one of those things where it's like, what a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
A movie. And don't read too much about it. I mean, you don't really.
Yeah, the more you're able to do that, I mean, I'm learning that more and more. You know, new Guardians of the Galaxy trailers are coming out, it seems like, every
Avoid
day.
Them.
I have been. I watched that first teaser. at least two trailers have come out and a number of TV spots. I've honestly been avoiding because why not just enjoy those moments for the first time?
I kind of do hope there's almost a seismic shift because in today's day and age, in 2014...
There will not be.
No, and I know what you mean. Yeah, you're right. But in 2014, when there is such an overabundance of news, you've got magazines and shows like Extra.
Sorry,
and
nudes? An overabundance of nudes?
There is never an overabundance of nudes. A news of these movies like EW showing the poster of Age of Ultron, not right. The poster, but it's a photo of Age of Ultron, and there's like casting leaks and all these things. I really feel like, no, we should. There needs to be a pushback, and I know we're starting to internally think that, like, wait a minute, I'm getting too much information about the casting of the fourth Hunger Games movie.
Right.
Let's just let it sit out there, and I'll go see the movie and judge it then and be pleasantly surprised or not. Because anytime... I feel like 90% of the time, if I learn something beforehand, it's ultimately disappointing. Even if the movie ends up being good, it's like, well, I'm disappointed that I either A, knew about it because you know so much more information, or B, that I'm I don't know, like, why I even live in this culture that is like we're so obsessed with finding things out so soon.
Well, and for me, it's somewhat experiential too, because a lot of the movies that I've liked the most this year, be it Cheap Thrills or Blue Ruin or
Snowpiercer,
were things that I knew. I had not seen even a trailer for. Like, I might have known a premise. Mm. I knew maybe that a couple people that I respect saw it at a festival and liked it. You know, there was some good buzz around it. But I never watched a trailer for any of those movies. And, you know, my experience going to, like, the Chicago Critics Film Festival, just sitting down and watching a movie 100% cold. I knew nothing about it. That's such a rare experience. And added to my enjoyment of almost every movie, even stuff I didn't like. It was like, well, at least I didn't know exactly where it was going at every second.
Sure.
Has been so great that now I'm kind of actively, I'm not going to be the guy who like runs out holding my ears when like a trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy comes on, but I have to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, those guys are so insufferable regardless.
Exactly, and they're just as bad as the people
and not
who
for nothing,
need
but
to
like,
know everything.
We don't, our goal is to be as the least insufferable possible, and I know that might sound difficult, especially
and
when
I'm sure we fail at that goal.
When I'm on
times.
The podcast, I am totally insufferable because it's like I never left.
I want
like
to be sufferable. Like, annoying, but sufferable.
I can suffer you.
I need to talk real quick, though, about Guardians of the Galaxy, because this is a weird phenomenon. I'm not the world's biggest fan of Zoe Saldana. Like, her acting is fine. She is an alien. You have joked before, so for her to play this role,
from outer space,
makes perfect sense. We've joked before about my love of Avatar, and obviously she plays Neytiri, the Na'vi.
I like the way you said that.
And I'm not in love with her in that movie.
Yeah.
I have never, like, had a weird crush on an alien character before. I'm a little bit in love with her in Guardians of the Galaxy. I think she's...
You're fucking crazy.
I'm just going to come out now and say that I think she's really hot.
Did you have a crush on the green alien in the first Star Trek who turned out to be...
Rachel Nichols?
Rachel Nichols.
No.
Of G.I. Joe fame.
No, I was not. I did not have a crush on her.
She's cute.
Rachel Nichols is
cute. No, she's in body paint. Why didn't you love her, Neytiri
Rachel Nichols is a fine-looking woman.
Naviophile.
But I didn't see her and think, oh my gosh, I don't know what it is that I think... Zoe Saldana in Guardians of the Galaxy is really hot.
Well,
but something clearly, like, I've crossed a line in my nerdiness.
Yeah, for sure. Years ago.
Erica reminds me of this all the time. Like, I didn't marry this big of a dork, so what happened? And I don't know. The older I get, the more...
You don't know, and you don't care.
...on the spectrum I become. We're going to go watch our first movie. Should I say what it is now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we're going to watch The Raid 2, which Doug has
I have
not
never
seen. It's one of my very favorite movies of the year. It's probably my number 2 or 3 right now.
Okay.
So we'll be back in like 7 hours, because it's a long
fucking
movie.
No, great.
So we will check in after The Raid 2. Doug won't even have an ass anymore. It will have been kicked so hard.
I am so excited to do this. I think that we should do this every year or every month,
I like
maybe.
It. Every month you're going to fly back.
A slumber party. We got to think of a clever name for it, though, too, just to watch movies in the basement that isn't massacre based. That's not horror movie based.
I like it. We're watching horror movies tonight, though, just so you know. A couple.
Shit. Clive Barker?
Let's hope.
It's like I never left.
Okay, cool. We're back. And,
yay.
It's late, and we just watched The Raid 2. I had already seen it. I wrote a review of it over at fthismovie.net. But, Douglas, this was your first viewing.
It was.
What did you think?
Oh my!
Kind of slow.
Oh my goodness!
Kind of boring. But
kind of like.
But really romantic.
The only way The Raid 2 could be improved,
yeah,
is if it were directed by Keanu Reeves, director
like
of Man of Tai Chi.
He did a good job with that movie.
He did.
The Raid 2.
That's a joke, but it's not to take away from The Man of Tai Chi, right? That's how it's called, right? The Man of Tai Chi.
Man of Tai Chi.
The Man of...
That's a joke, because I'm never going to be broke. When I die, there'll be bullets and gun smoke. You don't like my lifestyle? Fuck you. I'm rolling with the New Jack crew. And I'm a hustler.
That's a little iced tea.
H-U-S-T-L-E-R, hustler.
That was my shotgun. The Man of the Tai Chi is Keanu Reeves' directorial debut, and it's pretty awesome. And I was reminded a little bit, because I haven't seen The Raid 1, Redemption, The Raid Redemption, in quite a long time.
Yeah.
And I said to you early on, I'm like, what movie did I, because I can't remember yesterday, I said to Patrick, I'm like, what movie did I just see which featured a smaller Asian man who was a kick-ass fighter? Mm-hmm. And you said, oh, that was Man of Tai Chi. And I'm like, oh, right.
And I was like, Ken Jeong in The Hangover Part 3.
And then I watched this movie, and Rama, played by Uko something. What's his last name?
Iko. I don't know how to say his name. Ikouwais.
Iko Uwais?
Sure.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Iko Uwais.
He's the
my grandma, your grandma.
Sin. Ho. Everyone should see Satisfaction with Justine Bateman.
Yes.
Because that's what Patrick
Julia Roberts
is singing right now.
Trini Alvarado and Britta Phillips. Liam Neeson.
So I don't even know. I'm a little delirious. Here's the problem.
Scott Coffey.
Here's the problem. For the basement, for the documented basement massacre, which is the 24-hour marathon. This is not a 24-hour marathon whatsoever.
No.
But for that marathon, that was a 24-hour marathon in Patrick's basement, modeled after the basement, or not the basement, but the massacres in the past that have taken place at Chicago Area Repertory Theaters. It starts at noon.
Right.
We started this movie, which is a good 2.5 hours.
It's 2.5 hours.
At 11 o'clock.
Correct.
A central time at night, so it's now 1:30, 1:45 in the morning. So
right.
I'm not super tired, but I am a little...
Because for you, it's still 5 o'clock yesterday, right?
You're it on is. LA I'm time. On Sydney time, so it's actually tomorrow. I'm talking to Patrick in the future. So anyway, yeah, The Raid 2 is awesome. I mean, yeah. It's long. I mean, if that's people's legit complaint, it is a long movie. I mean, there's definitely a lot of fight sequences and stuff.
Yeah, like every 15 minutes or so, there's another kick-ass fight that makes me feel like it's not long.
And I'm wondering if Gareth Evans had a smaller scope, meaning like the story. Okay, what I like about it is this. It's an awesome movie. Everyone should see it. Read Patrick's review. It's a kick-ass movie. I do think it's, I mean, my first viewing, obviously, and I haven't seen The Raid Redemption in quite a while, but I think it's superior. It surpasses The Raid Redemption.
I do too.
I think it's some of the best fight choreography I've ever seen in my life.
I think the same thing.
It's insanely violent. I cannot believe that this movie had an R rating. I mean, some of the stuff too is violent. A lot of cool stuff that's violent. Oh, there's a spider dangling in front of my face. You see this right here?
Yeah.
Hold on. Spider emergency.
Oh my God.
Can I? Yes.
Like it's literally dropping down right between us.
I just totally, that was, it's corpse on the microphone. I hope I got it.
Yeah, me too. Because what if you didn't? I can't continue this podcast in good conscience.
I don't even know like where it would be. Oh yeah, I got it.
Oh, thanks.
Sorry about that.
Okay, the spider's fine.
By the way, PETA. I'm now, is there a garbage here? Yeah,
everyone from PETA, the spider is fine.
I just we complained about the violence in the movie and I totally
and
just ended a life.
Murder.
It's insanely violent, and not just violent. I mean, there's some violence, and I'll be the first to admit that's like, you are like, whoa, oh my God, that's not cool, but it's like, that's fucking crazy.
Right.
And this movie has lots of that, but it also has violence. Like, there was a scene, this is not a spoiler, in which a character just murders 6 people in a row nonchalantly, and it's I don't like it. It's crazy.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty nutty.
Yeah.
And it really gave me an unsettling, a bad feeling.
Yeah.
And there's also the violence, you know, I think if we haven't talked about this, it's probably been talked about before in terms of violence in general, where there's some violence where like a person explodes and it's like, oh my God, that's violent. And there's violence where a person gets hit in the head with a bat and it strikes you more to the core, the smaller stuff almost,
right.
Like a person getting their face dragged across something sharp, because it's like, I could feel that. There's
right,
something...
you can kind of imagine what that might feel
right.
like, as opposed to getting blown up. You can't really imagine.
Right,
that.
And I mean,
I can't.
Or getting shot, like, I mean, a shot, I'm assuming
getting shot, I can
getting
imagine.
Shot is horrible.
Right.
But I can't really imagine a bullet entering, but I can imagine, like, getting punched in the nose. And some, so in a way, like, that's worse to watch on film. This movie is filled with little tiny things that are like, that looks horrible.
Yeah,
like, that,
it's an action movie with horror movie violence.
Yeah.
Like, which is part of why it's awesome. And that's part of why his horror movie was so good, because it's a horror movie directed with, like, the energy and sort of kineticism of an action movie.
For
so,
sure.
He's the man. I want him to make more movies.
I know. And so what's he making? He's made four, including the segment of VHS 2, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm really hoping he does a Star Wars spinoff.
Is that being talked about?
No, not at all.
Is that being just bandied about?
They just seem to be grabbing a lot of sort of up and comers.
Okay.
But no, I don't want him to do that ever.
No, that's Rian Johnson is doing a Star Wars.
Rian Johnson's doing Star Wars, not a spinoff.
He's doing The Family Matters of
Gareth
Perfect Strangers.
Edwards is doing a spinoff. And
oh, Gareth Edwards.
Josh.
It's late.
Josh Trank, who directed Chronicle and is doing the upcoming Fantastic Four reboot.
You hate Chronicle.
I'm not a huge Chronicle
fan. This is our last podcast. I went on a limb for Chronicle.
You're going to love Fantastic Four, though, because it has Kate Mara in it.
I do like the Mara sisters. I go back and forth. Okay,
on your F-heads. Favorite Mara?
Yeah, I do.
Sure.
I've been thinking about this. Like, if I met them in a regular world and I was like, I'm instantly drawn to Rooney Mara. Uh-huh. I think Rooney Mara is like... But I think I'd always kind of be looking over my shoulder at her sister, and that's not right. That's not fair to Rooney.
It's really not.
It's like,
you
I'm
owe
with
it to
Rooney
to only have eyes for Rooney.
Because let's be honest, Kate is in less stuff. Rooney Mara has shown everything in two movies, I believe.
Everything talent-wise, you're talking about.
Yeah,
like,
her
she's
talents,
laid it all
her
out
big,
there.
Beautiful.
I feel like based
talents
on the performances that I've seen them give, and maybe Rooney Mara, which every time I say it, I want to like.
Easy,
stab myself
easy
in the, or like step on a tack or just do something to
easy
hurt myself.
That's my girlfriend.
I understand, but maybe she's gotten the better roles, but every time I see Rooney Mara in something, I feel like she might be the more talented of the Mara sisters.
Well, she's obviously taken on more roles, and I think she's cast in more stuff. Kate Mara's big thing is
but
House
only
of
recently
Cards.
Kate Mara's been around longer,
but Kate Mara was in more like teen stuff, right?
Yeah, I think so. She's never gotten like
and
a ton of good parts.
Rooney Mara's like the legit, like, I'm gonna be the girl with the dragon tattoo.
She has a dragon tattoo.
Tattoo. And but anyway, so yeah.
Did you see Side Effects?
I did, yeah.
She's
I
good
wanted
in
Side
that
Effects
as well
to be a different movie,
me
but
too.
It's not bad. I don't.
Sure. Yes, yeah, I agree. I agree, it's not bad.
I just am judging it harshly because I want it to be a different kind of movie. But
right.
Yeah, no, Rooney Mara's great. What are we, so anyway.
We're talking
about
the raid, too.
If I was with Rooney Mara, I think I'd always look over because Kate's definitely cute, even though she looks like a little like Fievel, a little rabbit.
If I
face
was with Rooney Mara, I would constantly be looking at pictures of Zoe Saldana in Guardians of the Galaxy.
But not of Rachel Nichols.
Not
how about Rachel Nichols in the G.I. Joe movie? Is she Lady Jane? No, she's Scarlet.
She's Scarlet.
Yeah.
It's been
is
a
there
while
a Lady Jane?
It's been a while. No.
What the fuck? Where?
Well, they're working on another
G.I.
Joe.
Why isn't anyone talking to me about how to make
because
things better?
Because this G.I. Joe sequel made a bunch of money because things make sense in
well,
the world.
Heath Allen loved it.
He did. He did.
So the Raid 2 is kick-ass. It's a little long, but I don't, again, oh, what I was going to say was, I don't know if Gareth Evans were to somehow narrow the scope, not to narrow the scope, but like, just make it shorter, he'd have to cut a bunch of great fight sequences and a bunch
right
of great characters. And I guess you could do that. I don't know. You know, it works. It is what it is. And
yeah, I don't mind the scope. I don't even mind the little side detours that the movie takes. I know one of the complaints is that it spends some time with a character, an actor who's actually returning from the first movie but playing a different character in this movie.
The long-haired guy.
Yeah, and he kind of gets his own little side story. And it doesn't totally tie into the movie. I mean, parts of it do, but that's a complaint that the movie takes this detour that it doesn't need to take. I don't mind
it. No, because you still like that character.
Right.
You know, it comes down to Gareth Evans, who's wrote, directed, and edited, and like fight choreography with some other actors in the movie. He's an artist. I mean, not to sound totally douchey, but like the guy is an artist, and it's something like this. You have to be like, okay, I put my trust in the hands of an artist, and like these are the choices you're making. And yeah, you might be like, well, maybe it should be shorter, like Droopy Dog.
Yeah, but Joe Lieberman.
At the same time, it's like, no, it's like, this is what he's giving me. And I should be grateful that something like this exists, because it is kick dick.
Yeah, it's, again, it's obviously not for all tastes, but it really is. If you're an action movie fan, like, this is next level shit.
Yeah, I don't know what, I mean, there's a fight near the end. It's probably the biggest, longest fight sequence. That's still just a very basic fight sequence. It's right. It's one man against one man. It takes place in a kitchen, and you think to yourself, oh, this must be over. And it's not. It's about halfway over. And then at the end, you're just like, what else can they do?
Right.
Fight-wise. I mean, obviously, in a real fight, it would be much repetition. And there's not a lot of repetition in this.
No, and it's really worth watching more than once, because the first time, obviously, I was watching the movie before the plot and the fights and all that cool shit. And this time I was, and you were doing it too, paying attention to the camera. It moves in so many ways that you don't even notice, because you're paying so much attention to the sort of the athleticism that's going on. But watch just the shots that Gareth Evans has worked out ahead of time.
Right. It's so the perfect combination. I think a lot of people say, like, the hacky action directors cut too much, and that's very much true.
Right, or they hold the camera in too close, or they shake the camera.
And you can't see what's going on. And then you've got a new wave of directors, thankfully, that are doing longer takes.
Right.
Sometimes it works. I mean, 99% of the time it works, but sometimes it's kind of like, well, maybe they should cut it, because it looks, sometimes it, you can see right through it.
It looks rehearsed.
And this one, I mean, he does, I think he probably does do a lot of cuts, but it feels like there's no cuts. And I mean, obviously that's the best editing, is when you don't notice the cut. And this is just, I mean, it's perfect. It's a long take mixing with like a really quick thing, an insert shot that you never lose the geography of the scene.
No, not at all.
The continuity is always perfectly there. He really, I mean, I was blown away and energized by it.
Sweet. I'm glad, because now we're going to watch Under the Skin, which may drain us of all energy.
You haven't seen Under
the
Skin.
This is one that I haven't seen, but it's a lot of people have named it one of their favorites of the year thus far. Now that the year is about half over, a lot of outlets are publishing, like, here's our favorite so far.
Okay.
Under the Skin has made several lists. Adam Riske has a review of the movie at fthismovie.net. I've read his review. I know he's a huge fan. So I'm excited to see it. I worry, because I know it's kind of a slower, quieter movie, and it is about 2 a.m. So this may be the opposite direction from the raid.
For our pajama jammy jam, this might be the way. This is House Party 2 level shit, is what I'm saying.
So we're going to go see Scarlett Johansson.
Hey, Eraserhead.
Take it off.
Ooh.
And
yeah, because the Raid 2, my biggest complaint, no nudity.
Not enough.
Insanely violent R, if they showed a nipple, X, NC-17.
So we're going to watch Under the Skin, and then we'll be back, guys.
It's like I never left.
And we're back. It's like 4 a.m. now, guys. And we just saw Under the Skin, both for the first time.
Both for the first time.
Guess what? 2 a.m. is not the right time to see Under the Skin.
When is the right time to watch
I don't know,
Under the Skin?
But it's not 2 a.m.
When did Adam Riske watch Under the Skin? Because Adam Riske loves that movie, which is fine, which is great. And he is very effusive in his praise. He wrote a review back in April for the movie. And I don't know when he saw it, but it probably wasn't 2 a.m., 2 o'clock in the morning.
I don't think it was.
No.
I don't think it was. I obviously don't want to...
You don't want to spoil anything or say too much.
Right, and I also don't want to be like, oh, I loved it, or I didn't like it at all, because I definitely think I have to like live with... Like, we literally just finished watching it, and it's something that I think we have to...
I mean, it's all like...
Live with for a little while. This is something interesting, if you haven't yet seen Under the Skin. There's very, very little dialogue in the movie.
Very little.
Very little.
In fact, I think if we were to stop right now and do a word count of this segment of the podcast about Under the Skin...
We've already said more about Under the Skin than Under the Skin says about Under the Skin.
Right.
And the words that are there are primarily in Scottish.
Yeah. It was on Blu-ray. I could have asked to turn the subtitles on, but I don't know if it would have mattered.
I just wanted to let it wash over me.
It's all like, as I lit a little. You're under the skin, milady.
Scarlett Johansson is...
What do you have to say about Under the Skin?
I have no idea.
I just want to build on the fact that, yeah, we just finished it. I definitely also agree. I have to live with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting things going on and some things I really, really, really like.
Yeah.
And
it's very much like a mood movie.
Right. And some of those, I mean, obviously some of the best movies are my personal favorites are mood movies, but I have to live with this one a little bit because I'm sure some scenes and some sequences will stick with me and I'll probably think about a lot.
Right.
But I can't, I mean, at this point I'm still kind of wrapped up in like, oh my God, what is going on?
Yeah,
do something.
I did not have that gut reaction.
I was
like, I love
do
this.
Something.
Say something. Not a lot of movies that I've seen filmed in Scotland. So I thought that was interesting. There was a lot of like cool shots of Scotland.
I mean, it's I'll be honest.
Please. This podcast is nothing
if not
brutally honest.
Listen, I tell you like it is.
You gotta do you.
I'm kind of a bitch and I say what I feel. Listen, we've all seen
movies.
GIFs.
Scarlett Johansson.
We've all seen GIF files and screen caps and little random scenes from Under the Skin. It's right now it is mid-July 2014. This movie came out in mid-March 2014.
Okay.
And we've all seen the scenes in which this movie is famous for.
I don't know if you can say we've all.
We have all. I know you have.
I've seen Under the Skin.
Giant pervert. And that's why I think this movie is getting a little more traction than it might otherwise get.
Maybe.
I think it'll... I mean, there's obviously always...
I don't mean to interrupt. At the same time, I feel like Halle Berry... okay, so here's the deal, guys. Scarlett Johansson is naked in Under the Skin.
Is she? And there's a whole sequence that's a pretty great sequence, if that's what you're interested in, where she just examines herself in front of a mirror.
Which, if I was Scarlett Johansson, that's all I would do.
I would stare at myself, too.
I feel like Halle Berry getting naked in like Swordfish got way more attention. Like Scarlett Johansson is somebody that a lot of people are like, I can't wait to see her naked. And then she gets naked. And it didn't get talked about that much. It wasn't like everybody rushing out to see Under the Skin.
Right.
To ski, which is good because those people would have been really frustrated.
They would have been all brown bunnied
by the movie. Yeah.
Well, don't you think also, and I'm not comparing the two in a popularity.
You're not comparing this to Swordfish, is
I'm
what you're
not
saying?
In a popularity contest, but Halle Berry's popularity, I think, is, I mean, at the time especially, she was the foxiest woman on the planet.
But
which
isn't,
I guess,
isn't Scarlett Johansson?
I don't know. I don't know if we live in that world anymore.
What, because of 9/11?
9/11 happened.
It's very late. I'm just trying to think of what changed in the world.
But I do think that her nakedness, and also her nakedness is very artistic in this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think Swordfish, it was just purely gratuitous.
Oh,
where she pulls down the
laughable
book and just reveals her
breasts.
Yeah,
it was a paycheck. It was right. Laughable. Whereas in this, it's very much sort of what the movie's kind of about.
Right, exactly. But I do think that it got a lot of track, especially in like the fanboy, like, I want to see this girl naked, and they saw her naked. And I swear to God, I forgot my point.
So let's go back to Swordfish. Hugh Jackman is a brilliant hacker with frosted blonde tips.
I love the part in Swordfish.
John Travolta.
Billy Bob Thornton has sex with Puff Daddy's wife. Swordfish.
Yeah.
Okay, listen.
Yeah. And John Travolta is like, I must become him.
Are you doing powder? Is that
Face Off? It was a face from the trailer to Face Off.
Listen. Okay, so I do think though that her nakedness in this movie is another reason why it's kind of the movie can stand on its own. I'm not saying I'm not taking anything away from Under the Skin, but I do think it's why it's kind of maybe at the forefront of my mind. It's kind of if an indie movie came and went that didn't have a A-list actress like in Avengers naked, you know, I think I'd probably put in my queue and forget about it on Netflix. And here we are with Under the Skin. But I do think that there's always a place for movies like these, but I do have to sit with them for a bit.
Yeah.
We talked about, this is the second time I brought up Upstream Color tonight, but that's another movie in my mind where I'm kind of like, I should sit with that before I jump to conclusions, Matt. And this movie I have to sit with too, because I'm not sure it's for me. But again, there's things that stuck with me. Just like Upstream Color is most definitely not for me.
Yeah.
But there are sequences that stick with me, not always in the best way, but
well, I kind of have a feeling too that we've watched The Raid 2, and we're about to watch Stage Fright.
Stagecoach.
A horror musical.
John Ford's from Stage Fright. Coach.
Earlier this year that I had Fright a lot of coach. Fun with. I have a feeling that tomorrow the movie that you're going to be thinking about after you sleep and wake up will be Under the Skin. Like, I think the weird music and the shots.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's just how it's 4 a.m. and it's like I'm in a basement in Chicago.
Right.
With you just staring at me the whole movie.
Whatever.
Like, watching my reaction kind of to Scarlett Johansson's
it's
nakedness.
How I liked it. But it is that kind of, maybe 2 a.m. is the best part time to watch it. Because
honestly, yeah.
It's over and then you're like, how much of that did I dream and how much of
that
was real?
It feels a lot like it. There's a part where, I mean, it's obviously a lot of kind of crazy visuals and stuff like that too. And it just, it's very dreamlike.
Yeah.
I might have a problem with the ending a bit. I won't spoil anything and I'm not going to spoil it. I mean, Adam Riske reviewed some things and I don't want to say he spoiled, but he did. There's a little Adam Riske spoil.
If you know nothing about the movie, it's a spoiler. Yeah. I knew the premise.
Well, it's based on a book and
right.
Yeah, but I mean,
so
I would argue that
me.
There's a, if you would, it's better if you go in knowing nothing.
Sure.
You could quickly get there as an audience member with the brain, but if you, well, whatever. I'm not going to say too much about Under the Skin.
I hadn't seen a trailer or anything. Scarlett Johansson is interesting. Her career is,
she's a tour de force.
She
like luck.
it's an interesting performance. I mean, I think there's more to it than just like being silent. But I mean, I like that she's kind of doing all kinds of stuff. Like in this year alone, she did Captain America, Winter Soldier. She did Under the Skin. She did Don John, which
her.
Is not great. She did Her, which I think she's really good in.
Yeah, and that's just her voice. I mean, she's beautiful
right.
to look at. I mean, just striking.
She did all the talking in that movie and then all of the not talking in,
right.
in Under the Skin. I want to combine the two movies.
But do you think that movie Under the Skin would have been different if it was, I read some IMDb trivia while the movie was happening to me. And it was, it gave a one trivia piece. It gave a list who's who of like the women who auditioned for it. And it's a bunch. It's like Ava Green and
really?
Olivia Wilde and January Jones and Jessica Biel. And all these women vied for the part. And I'm thinking like, I don't know what they bring. I don't know why Scarlett. I mean, I think Adam tries to make a point, a case in his review on the website, upthismovie.net. I don't know if I buy that necessarily. I do think she's beautiful, and I do think
sure.
she's definitely striking, and that's just, you know, her natural ability or natural gifts.
I want to say so many things about some of the people that auditioned, but I won't for lack of spoiling it, or, you know, because I don't want to spoil anything.
I know what you want to say.
I think it would have been just a different movie with any of those.
Do you?
Actresses.
I don't know. I don't know.
Not, I mean, not, no, not a, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say a different movie, but a different performance. Like, I think
sure.
that there are things that she did that those other actresses wouldn't
actually
have done, and they would have done some things that she didn't do.
This might be the perfect movie for January Jones.
It might be,
you know,
but
I mean,
but I also think it wouldn't have
no,
been.
And by the way, I say that as like, I don't like her.
No,
whatsoever.
I know.
She
I know exactly
just,
what you're saying because yeah. it doesn't require her to like talk necessarily.
And
but,
just doesn't require any emotion. I said emotion.
But I think it does at a certain point. And that was the stuff that I thought Scarlett Johansson did a good job with that I don't think January Jones would have.
No, she's great in all the things that she's in.
She's her best work is clearly American Wedding. she eats the dog poo, right? No, wait. That was Stifler. Stifler eats the poo.
She's great in that movie Whiskey River or whatever it's called.
I saw that movie.
No,
I don't
called?
Remember what it's called at all.
Winslow Creek.
I believe it's Winslow Creek. I'm almost positive it's Winslow
what
Creek.
What the heck is that called?
I
it's
saw it.
Nuts now.
I saw the movie.
It's a Western where she happens also to.
Again,
take
another
top
movie
off.
That's sort of famous because she.
Oh, yeah. No one else saw that movie, but.
It was on Netflix Instant.
Yeah.
And,
it still is, I think. It was.
It was not the best. Not the worst, but not the best.
Wickets Run.
I feel like you're getting closer.
It's got a W in it, right?
It might. I genuinely have no memory.
But I also
of
think
what
January is spelled with a W. January. I'm wary of January Jones.
So we're gonna watch Stage
Did
Fright.
We say enough about Under the Skin?
Probably. I don't feel like we can say that much without spoiling certain things, and I don't want to.
Right.
It just came out on DVD and Blu-ray, so it if you're interested in seeing it, you should
see it, especially if you're into more of like the mood pieces and more, I mean, no going in that it's deliberate in its pacing and it's like absence of dialogue. It's got some beautiful locations. It would have benefited from the direction of Keanu Reeves.
Is it Jonathan Glazer's third movie only?
I looked it up. Yeah, I think so, because I looked on IMDb and it said he did Birth, which I didn't see.
I'm not a fan
of. Sexy Beast, which I saw and don't remember anything of. And I liked some Radiohead videos and stuff.
Oh, well, there you go. I liked Sexy Beast, even though I remember the first time I saw the trailer for that. It's just like a very British crime movie. And then at the end of the trailer, the title comes on and I remember turning to my wife and saying, that's literally the last thing I would have expected.
Was
that
she your wife
to
at
be
the time?
Called? No, I think we were just dating.
So you should say my girlfriend.
This was like like you Sexy could have told Beast. Me any other title, right. And I would have thought that was a more appropriate
it's like
title
quiz.
Than
what do you
Sexy
do?
Beast.
Right.
But I liked that movie, and Birth I did not like because it was trying so hard to like. Feel like a Roman Polanski, even down to Nicole Kidman's Mia Farrow haircut and taking a bath with her reincarnated husband, who's like reincarnated as like an 11-year-old boy.
Easy with the spoilers.
Take a bath together
for Birth,
and it's not supposed to be creepy. I can't remember.
That sounds like straight out of an Italian horror movie,
Mama. So let's go watch.
Yeah, let's do it.
Stage Fright. No famous people really that I can advertise in Stage Fright except for Meatloaf. The biggest name in Stage Fright?
Bitch tits.
Meatloaf. So we will talk to you guys again in a little bit.
It's like I never left.
Okay, we're back. We just watched Stage Fright from this year, directed by Jerome Sable, I want to say.
Salem? Jerome?
It's a horror musical, slasher movie musical. It takes place at a musical theater camp. I have a review up at ifthismovie.net. I am a fan. I think it's a fun movie. Douglas?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Jerome...
It's like I'm not even saying words anymore.
I mean, what day is it? Is my point. It's right now, currently, it's 6:10 in the morning.
Okay.
6:10 a.m. On a weekday, by the way, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it. We're doing
it. We're actually doing it.
Totally do. Okay. So Stage Fright, there's a review. I liked it.
Oh, good.
I dozed off. I'll be honest. I dozed it's off okay. for about 10 minutes, I think, a middle chunk.
Yeah.
And I woke up to see the lead actress all kabookied out. And
she was all kabooked.
It's a really funny, I mean, it's horror in a loose sense of the word. It's kind of like a throwback to the slasher stuff. And it's obviously trying to be funny. Meatloaf is in the movie. Minnie Driver, comedic actress, Mini Driver. Ya can't come in.
Emancipiat. Allie McDonald is the lead, and she's delightful.
I think she reminds me of Leighton Meester, which is a name.
I feel like you're not even saying a word.
Leighton Distro.
Do you mean to say Minka Kelly?
Leighton Distro. It's good. The songs are silly, but it's like, I feel like whenever they pull out the electric guitar and start doing like metal versions.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
always just so funny. If you watch this movie,
metal in the movie,
stick around for the very end. They do the lead metal singer does a whole medley of the songs from the movie, and the last one is a pretty funny.
It's very funny.
It's good. I think everyone should watch it. It makes me want to read your review. In fact, I'll go do that right now.
Well, thank you.
So what's next?
I don't know yet. We got to figure out maybe one more to cap things off and then wrap it up because we've been awake all night, which is not really the best way to watch movies, guys, it turns out. We did this, you know, back in October, and we did it for 24 hours straight. And again, it's like a weird experiment, but not an ideal way.
I'm doing pretty... I mean, I dozed off for 10
movies.
Minutes during
That's not bad.
This movie. Yeah. I stayed awake for all of Under the Skin.
Which is an accomplishment.
I don't know how much I'll be awake for the next one, but I definitely feel like watching another one just to say like, three movies is like hardly any marathon.
Well, but The Raid 2 counts as four movies.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
It's long and we started it late.
But Stage Fright's good. Everyone check out Stage Fright. It's, it got mixed reviews, you told me, right?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of really positive reviews.
The Chicks of Fox, that's the kind of caliber of reviewing I do at 6:10 in the morning.
She is lovely.
She
everyone.
Has a great body.
I want to see
work.
Her in more things, and she's Canadian.
Oh, the whole movie is so Canadian. It's great in that way. Also, we watched a short film. Mention that, too.
Yes. The Legend of Beaver
Dan?
Creek?
No, I think it's
Beaver Dam?
I think it's Beaver, like a guy named Dan.
Beaver Dan?
I think so.
Stumpy Dave? I forget.
It's a really funny 5-minute short made by Jerome Sable. Is that his name?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of the stuff that's in that short is sort of carried over to...
It's a good litmus test. If you feel like, maybe I want to watch this movie, and you could definitely save Stage Fright for Scary Movie Month. But if you feel like, oh, I want to watch this, but it's, it seems kind of maybe not my cup of tea, watch the short Legend of Beaver. How do you find that short? Is it online?
I think it's available online. Yeah, okay. I think you could probably just find it on YouTube or Vimeo.
It's pretty funny and ridiculous.
Probably MySpace. I think it's on MySpace.
I think it's on Friendster. check it out, and then that will, if you like it, you'll probably like Stage Fright.
Yeah, probably.
I did.
So we're going to try and think of one more movie to watch and watch it, and then we'll come back and wrap up this weird podcast.
It'll be like I never left.
Hey, everybody, we're back again. We just watched The Taking of Beverly Hills from 1991.
That's what I call an interception.
Starring Ken Wall, Matt Frewer.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Offsides.
Robert Davi and Harley Jane Kozak.
Oh, my God. She's such a beautiful version of Kimmy Gibbler's mom.
I think she's a fox. I mean, not in that movie.
If you like Kimmy Gibbler from Full House.
Grown up.
Do me a favor, everyone out there. Google search Harley Jane Kozak. First of all, the name just rolls off the tongue. And tell me she's not totally
Harley Jane Kozak - Bromley.
Of the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
She is just like your best friend's mom from the 90s mixed with Kimmy Gibbler. And yeah, she's not the worst. I mean,
She's out of Ken Wall's league.
She's a neutral zone infraction, is my point.
Ken Wall plays quarterback, LA quarterback Boomer Hayes.
Boomer Willie Mays Hayes.
And he and Matt Frewer are the only people left to rescue Beverly Hills when it's taken over by corrupt cops.
Matt Frewer is Max Headroom and just the weirdest looking guy.
He's all Beverly Hills.
I'm a cop there.
It's a crazy, not very good action movie.
It starts off so great. It starts off so strong.
Once you get past the 6 minutes of opening credits.
Oh, but even that just is like ridiculous. I had never seen this movie before. Patrick
no
Bob,
one has seen this movie.
A version from Germany.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. It's never been released on DVD in the United States, much less Blu-ray. You could get a VHS, 20 years ago. But for Father's Day, my wonderful wife bought me a region-free Blu-ray player so that I could import The Taking of Beverly Hills.
I mean, was that the end goal?
High def.
Was that the...
I mean...
It's like, I really want to see The Taking of Beverly Hills.
I had already seen it. it wasn't the specific goal, but it was, for things like that.
Well, I can't fault you.
But the title... on the German Blu-ray is not The Taking of Beverly Hills. It's Boomer something auf der Hollywood
it's something was overthrown. Do you have it here?
It's in the other room.
Oh, okay.
I'm too lazy to go get it.
Not bother.
We've been doing this for like 12 hours now.
It is officially now 8 o'clock in the morning in Chicago.
Yeah.
Thursday. Right? And we're done. We did four movies, which I know is not like super.
No, because when you consider like For the Massacre, we do like 13, I think.
Right. No, and that's the thing, though. It's listen is my point. The Massacre starts at noon, goes to noon. It's a 24-hour thing. It's a totally different experience. This was we tried something different. We wanted to start at night, and we had some other stuff earlier before that, which we won't get into right now, but we started pretty late, like 10 o'clock at night. So yeah. It's hard to just do like a 12-hour marathon when you're exhausted during the week.
And for the massacre, you know, a lot of stuff we watched was like 85 minutes. And again, The Raid 2 is 2.5 hours
oh,
long.
Oh, absolutely.
Under the Skin is 7 hours long, I want to say.
It felt like a dream.
It's 2 hours.
It was like 2 hours, except it wasn't 2 hours. That's a dream. Ken Wall, I'm so unfamiliar with his work.
Check him out.
But the movie starts off so strong in that it's so ridiculous. So Patrick has this German Blu-ray, and it's like comes on with like German dubbing too. It's just we had to change it. And it's pretty out there and funny, and then quickly it kind of falls, at least as far as I'm concerned, you know, follows the beats of any sort of 80s, 90s action movie, and then wraps up just with ridiculous football puns. So it's good.
I found the case. The German title is The Taking of the Beverly Hills. This was a weird, fun experiment. And
I had fun. I saw four movies.
Yeah,
three of
right?
Which, three of which I enjoyed seeing, but one of which
you didn't know existed before tonight.
Well, exactly. Well, that's, yeah. And the other three I really wanted to see.
Baron Dahl.
So I had fun.
And you're coming back to Chicago when?
October.
Yeah, he is.
I know
everyone. It is a long time off.
My brain has
it will be here
to function
before you know it, though.
But yeah, for real, it's now the it's mid July. I'll be back in October for a big chunk of Scary Movie Month, and I'm looking forward to that and all the fun we have with that, with the Scary Movie Challenge.
I'll try to find some more German Blu-rays to watch.
Well, the stuff you're gonna find involves a lot of Scheisse.
Oh dear. I know you've only been to a couple of movies in Los Angeles, but
yeah.
What's different about going to the movies in Los Angeles?
Let's
get into the whole LA thing.
This
now
is what we're talking about right now. Let's talk about
we've got Doug in studio.
I know, like, it's a big deal.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Exactly.
I'm not even at my best. I was at my best maybe 12, 13 hours
years?
Ago.
I'm sorry.
Hours, 12, 13 years ago. High school Doug. No, that wasn't high school. Please. I'm so old. College, post-college Doug. I was 12, 13 years ago. I was working man. Doug.
Yeah,
unjaded Doug. Optimistic Doug.
So is there anything different about?
Not really, because the theater that I go to, there's a couple different theaters by my house out there. One is Regal.
Sure.
And
sounds
chain.
Fancy.
And one is British. AMC, which is the one you go to out here.
Yeah.
The only difference is the biggest difference is the box office is outside. I know it sounds kind of like silly, and I'm sure if you live in California or any warm climate, but here everything obviously is inside. So you kind of order your tickets outside, and then you walk into the building to
That's not that weird.
A silly difference. I'm just trying to think if that was a serious question or if that was a joke question.
No, I was really wanting to know if there was anything.
Otherwise, everything's the
different.
Same. Lots more ads for Albertsons and Ralphs and Vons and less ads for Jewel and Dominic's and Mariano's. These are just grocery store differences.
What's your favorite thing you saw tonight?
The Raid 2.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, it's a long movie, but it's just kick ass. And I'm going to want to go back and if not watch the whole thing right away, watch maybe some fight sequences and stuff. Under Her Skin,
Under the skin.
Dude, cut me some slack, Jack.
So your slack is cut.
I'm conflicted on. I want to kind of sit with it for a bit. Stage Fright was a lot of fun, and this movie was just a ridiculous kind of entry into 80s. Even though it's 91, it's an 80s. I consider it like an 80s action movie.
I mean, there's some 90s things, like the music is
the
very
music's
90s.
Very 90s. Yeah, yeah. It has a pretty like popular soundtrack. I mean, not songs I necessarily want to hear, but they've got
Black Cat by Janet Jackson.
Janet Jackson. They've got In Living Color.
Epic by Faith No More.
That's
the best sequence in the movie where he's just limping around the streets of Beverly Hills because he limps the whole movie.
The whole movie, yeah, Ken Wall limps with his
whipping,
like,
throwing stars at cops.
His bouncing mullet. It's so odd. It's so weird.
I think the movie is on YouTube if you have any interest in checking out
If you're into the 80s heavy action and 90s heavy action as much as Patrick is.
There's a heavy action column on it, actually.
On our site?
.net. Yes.
Did you write it when I was napping?
Yeah. It was, you were asleep.
I was all
and I knocked that thing out. Yeah, no, there's the New Beverly a couple years ago showed it, and it was one of those times I used to check the New Beverly every once in a while, and at that point I hadn't seen it, but I wanted to see it back when I saw commercials for it in like 1990 or 91. I really wanted to go, and it barely came out. But the New Beverly was showing like a 35 millimeter print, and I remember being so jealous of like people that lived in LA that they could go see the Taking
so
of Beverly
funny,
Hills, because again at that point it wasn't available.
And
really.
I'm sure at this point I was not out there yet, but
you were not. This was years ago.
You're so jealous of people with the opportunity, but I know if I was out there, I'd be like, a 35 millimeter print of what? No thanks.
I would have tried to talk you into it.
That's so funny. You should just move to Los Angeles.
I guess I should, everyone.
You and the wife and the kids, or just you. You can come out to LA, Tinseltown, the Dream Factory, and just enjoy yourself. It's got a beautiful climate. Never rains.
Oh, good.
A drought is in effect. You find $500 if you water your lawn.
You guys should all plan your own movie sleepovers.
Movie slumber parties.
Choose different titles than the ones we chose. Because yeah. I mean, I liked, you know, the movies that we saw, but
well, it's the first time.
If I had planned it better, this really is not how I would have planned it.
And people don't care, obviously, but for
I care deeply.
I know you do. But in defense of what we did, it was just kind of not a last minute thing, because we knew we were going to watch movies, but it was like it just kind of morphed into this thing. Like, oh, let's do a podcast on this too and make it kind of a thing. I think if we do this again, I hope to. Come back and just spend a day or whatever and watch movies, there'd be probably more of a theme or, you know, something
we'll
that we
program
kind of,
it a little
right,
better.
Right. Yeah, yeah. But otherwise,
more Ken Wall movies, I think.
Ken Wall.
We're
going to
watch The Wanderers.
All over the place.
We're going to watch The Favor.
What's the one
with
the helicopters?
The Race for the Yankee Zephyr.
That's the one I want to
watch.
We're
going to watch Jinx.
Hold on, let's go back to that Race for
where
the Yankee
he
Zephyr.
He pairs up with Bette Midler. Dude had a solid career.
Wow.
And then Wise Guy made him a huge star, and this was like his only post-Wise Guy starring
role. Do you
think
he still can live off the Ken Wall, the 80s, 90s money from the movies
know.
He made?
Probably not.
Because Ken Wall is out there
right now
somewhere.
I'm guessing
he had
a pretty bad, like, drinking or drug habit.
Probably one of my neighbors. It's like I've seen him probably
for sure.
Down at the Arco gas station. That's another thing I don't
see. He took your order at In-N-Out, right?
That's right, In-N-Out.
He was making football puns.
He was
all up
there, Wiener Schnitzel, Jack in the Box. I don't know. These are just things that don't.
Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening to this unusual episode.
And ridiculous and unlistenable.
Of the podcast. Next week, we'll be back with something more standard, whatever that's going to be.
But no
I don't
Doug.
Know what.
It's not going to be Doug.
No Doug. Doug will be back in L.A. But Doug will be back on the show soon.
Hopefully.
From L.A.
I would love that.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. It was fun. It was fun to hang out and watch movies with you. Thank you guys very much for listening. And we'll see you next week.
It's like I never left.